my throat instantly thickening to clog my esophagus. Heat clawed at my throat, broke through, and swarmed the rest of my body. I bent forward, coughing and wheezing. "What is this stuff?" I gagged.
"Post-workout hydration," he said, but he wouldn't look me in the eye.
I continued to choke, my lungs rioting in spasms. "I thought it was Gatorade. That's what the bottle says."
All emotion vanished off his face. "It's for your own good," he said dully. Then he darted off in a blur of speed.
I was still bent at the waist, feeling as though my insides were slowly liquefying. Specks of electric blue burst across my eyes. The world swayed left, then right. Clutching my throat, I trudged forward, fearing that if I passed out here, I'd never be found.
Chapter 8. One staggering step after another, I made it out of the woods. By the time I reached the farmhouse, most of the fire in my bones feeling had dissipated. My breathing was back to normal, but my alarm was still front and center. What had Dante given me, and why? I had a key on a chain around my neck, and I let myself in. Taking off my shoes, I crept upstairs and padded quietly past my mom's bedroom. The clock on my nightstand read 10 minutes till 7. Before Dante came into my life, this would have been a normal, if not slightly early, hour to rise. Most days I woke up feeling refreshed, but this morning I felt exhausted and worried. Grabbing clean clothes, I headed to the bathroom to shower and get ready for school. At 8:10, I pulled the Volkswagen into the student parking lot and hiked up to the school, a towering gray building that resembled an old Protestant church. Inside, I crammed my belongings into my locker, grabbed my first and second period textbooks, and headed to class. My stomach clenched with hunger, but I was too rattled to eat. The blue drink still swam uneasily in my stomach. First up, AP US History. I took my seat and scanned my new cell phone for messages. Still no word from Patch. "It's cool," I told myself. Something probably came up. But I couldn't ignore the feeling that something wasn't right. Patch had told me he'd come over last night, and it wasn't like him to break a promise, especially since he knew how upset I'd been over the breakup. I was about to tuck my cell away when it chimed with a text. "Meet me by the Wentworth River in 30. Patch's text read, "Are you okay?" I immediately texted back. "Yes, I'll be at the boat docks. Make sure you aren't followed." The timing wasn't great, but I wasn't going to not meet Patch. He said he was fine, but I wasn't convinced. If he was fine, why was he calling me out of class, and why were we meeting all the way out at the boat docks? I approached Mrs. Warnock's desk.
"Excuse me, Mrs. Warnock? I'm not feeling well. Can I go lie down in the nurse's office?"
Mrs. Warnock removed her glasses and studied me.
"Is everything all right, Nora?"
"It's that time of the month," I whispered. Could I be any less creative? She sighed. "If I had a nickel for every time a student said that..."
"I wouldn't ask if my cramps weren't absolutely killing me."
I considered rubbing my stomach, but decided it might be too much. At last, she said, "Ask the nurse for acetaminophen, but the minute you're feeling better, I want you back in class. We're starting our unit on Jeffersonian republicanism today. If you don't have someone reliable to borrow notes from, you're going to spend the next 2 weeks playing catch-up." I nodded vigorously.
"Thank you. I really do appreciate it."
I scuttled out the door, jogged down a flight of stairs, and after looking both ways down the hall to make sure the vice principal wasn't making rounds, fled through a side door. I threw myself into the Volkswagen and made a break for it. Of course, that was the easy part. Getting back into class without a signed permission slip from the nurse was going to require nothing short of magic. No sweat, I thought. Worst-case scenario, I'd get caught ditching and spend the next week in early morning detention. If I needed an excuse to stay away from Dante, whom I no longer trusted, it was as good as any. The sun was out, the sky a hazy fall blue, but the crisp air cut through my puffer vest with the relentless foreboding of winter. The parking lot upriver from the boat docks was empty. No recreational fishermen out today. After parking, I crouched in the vegetation at the edge of the parking lot for a few minutes, waiting to see if anyone followed me. Then I took the paved walkway leading down to the docks. I quickly realized why Patch had selected the spot. Other than a few chirping birds, we were completely alone. 3 boat ramps stretched into the wide river, but no boats. I walked to the end of the first ramp, shielded my eyes from the glare of the sun, and looked around.
No patch. My cell phone chimed. I'm in the thicket of trees at the end of the walkway, Patch texted. I followed the walkway past the docks to the thicket, and that was when Pepper Freiberg stepped out from behind a tree. He had Patch's cell phone in one hand and a gun in the other. My eyes fixed on the gun, and I took an involuntary step back. It won't kill you, but a gunshot can be excruciatingly painful, he said. His polyester pants rode high on his waist, and his shirt hung at an ill-fitting angle. He hadn't lined up the buttons properly. However, despite his goofy, bumbling appearance, I felt his power ripple over me like the sun's hottest rays. He was far more dangerous than he appeared. Am I supposed to take it from someone who knows? I returned. His eyes darted both ways down the path. He sponged his forehead with a white handkerchief, further proof of his anxiety. His fingernails had been chewed to stubs. If you know what I am, and I'm betting Patch told you, then you know I can't feel pain. I know you're an archangel, and I know you haven't been playing by the rules. Patch told me you've been living a double life, Pepper. A powerful archangel moonlighting as a human? With your powers, you could really work the system. Are you after money, power, a good time? I already told you what I'm after. Patch, he said, a fresh sheen of sweat breaking across his forehead. He couldn't seem to mop it up fast enough. Why won't he meet me? Because you want to chain him in hell. I jerked my chin at the cell phone in Pepper's hand. Nice trick, luring me here with his phone. How did you get it? I took it from him last night at the Devil's Handbag. I found him hiding out in a brown van parked across the street from the entrance. He bolted before I got my hands on him, but in his hurry he missed grabbing his belongings, including his phone with all his contacts. I've been dialing and texting numbers all morning, trying to reach you. Secretly, I breathed in relief. Patch had escaped. If you brought me here to interrogate me, you're out of luck. I don't know where Patch is. I haven't talked to him since yesterday. In fact, it sounds like you were the last to see him. Interrogate! The tips of his Dumbo ears glowed pink. Golly, that sounds ominous. What do I look like, a common criminal? If you don't want to question me, why lure me all the way out here? So far we'd kept our conversation light, but I was growing increasingly nervous. I didn't trust Pepper's bungling, inept antics. They had to be a ploy. See that boat over there? I followed Pepper's gaze to the river's edge. A gleaming white motorboat bobbed on the water's surface. Sleek, expensive, and probably very fast. Nice boat. Going on a trip? I asked, trying not to sound worried. Yes, and you're coming with me. Chapter 9. I gave you a chance to do this the easy way, but I'm running out of patience, Pepper said. He stuffed the gun into the waistband of his pants, freeing up both hands to wipe his gleaming brow. If I can't get to Patch, I'll make him come to me. I saw where this was going. This is a kidnapping? You're most definitely not a common criminal, Pepper. Felon, sociopath, and nefarious evildoer all sound a bit closer to the mark. He loosened his collar and grimaced. I need Patch to do something for me. A little favor, that's all. Harmless, really. I had a feeling that favor included following Pepper down to hell, just before he jumped clear and slammed the gates shut on Patch. It was one way to take care of a blackmailer. I'm one of the good guys, Pepper said. An archangel. He can trust me. You should have told him to trust me. The fastest way to break his trust would be to kidnap me. Think this through, Pepper. Taking me isn't going to make Patch cooperate with you. He tugged harder at his collar. His face had flushed to the point that he resembled a sweaty pink pig. There's a lot more going on here than meets the eye. I'm out of options, can't you see that? You're an archangel, Pepper. And yet here you are, strolling around on Earth, carrying a gun and threatening me. I don't believe you're harmless, just like I don't believe you mean no ill will toward Patch. Archangels don't hang around on Earth for extended periods of time, and they don't take hostages. You know what I think? You've turned bad. I'm down here on assignment. I'm not bad, but I do have to take certain liberties. Gee, I'm almost tempted to believe you. I have a job for your boyfriend that only he can do. I don't want to kidnap you, but you forced my hand. I need Patch's help, and I need it now. Walk toward the boat, nice and easy. Any sudden movements and I shoot. Pepper made a summoning gesture. The boat glided obediently through the water, moving toward the closest boat ramp. Patch hadn't told me archangels could command objects. I didn't like the surprise, and I wondered how much this would complicate my attempt at escape. "Didn't you hear? He's not my boyfriend anymore," I told Pepper. "I'm dating Dante Matarazzi. Surely you've heard of him. Everyone has. Patch is 100% in my past."
"Guess we'll find out, won't we? If I have to ask you to start walking again, I'll put a hole in your foot."
I raised my arms level with my shoulders and walked to the boat ramp. A little late, I wished I'd worn my jean jacket with a tracking device. If Patch knew where I was, he'd come for me. Maybe he'd sewn a device into my puffer vest, too, but I couldn't count on it. And since I didn't know where Patch was, or if he was even okay, I couldn't count on him either.
"Climb into the boat," Pepper ordered me. "Take the rope on this seat and tie your hands to the guardrails."
"You're serious about this," I said, stalling. I glanced at the trees framing the river. If I could get to them, I could hide. Pepper's bullets would have more success hitting trees than me.
30 miles from here, I have a nice roomy storage room with your name on it. Once we get there, I'll give your boyfriend a ring."
He made a fist, extending his thumb and pinky finger, and placed the hand phone near his ear.
"We'll see if we can't come to an agreement. If he swears an oath to handle a personal matter for me, you might just get to see him and your friends and family again."
"How are you going to call him? You have his cell phone." Pepper frowned. He hadn't thought this through. Maybe I could use his disorganization to my advantage.
"Then we'll just have to wait for him to call us. For your sake, I hope he doesn't dawdle."
Reluctantly, I climbed inside the boat. I picked up the rope and started looping it into a knot. I couldn't believe Pepper was this stupid. Did he honestly think a run-of-the-mill rope would contain me? Pepper answered my question.
"In case you're having any escape-type thoughts, you should know that rope has been enchanted. It looks harmless, but it's stronger than structural steel. Oh, and once you've secured your wrists, I'll enchant it again. If you so much as tug against the rope to break free, it will pump 200 volts of electricity into your body."
I tried to keep my composure. "Special trick of archangels? Let's just say I'm more powerful than you think." Pepper swung one short leg over the boat, balancing his foot on the driver's seat. Before he could bring his other leg over, I slammed my body against the side of the boat, rocking it forcefully away from the ramp. Pepper stood 1 foot in, 1 foot out, with the gap of air between his legs widening. He reacted instantly. He shot into the air, hovering several feet above the boat. Flying. In my split-second decision to unbalance him, I'd forgotten he had wings. And not only that, but now he was clearly furious. I dove overboard, swimming hard for the center of the river, hearing shots being fired into the water from above. A splash sounded behind me, and I knew Pepper had dived in after me. In a matter of seconds, he would catch me and fulfill that promise to put a hole in my foot, and probably a lot worse. I wasn't as strong as an archangel, but I was Nephilim now, and I'd trained with Dante. Twice. I decided to do something either incredibly stupid or incredibly brave. Planting my feet firmly on the sandy riverbed, I pushed up with all my strength, vaulting straight out of the water. To my surprise, I overshot, soaring above the treetops crowding the riverbanks. I could see for miles and miles, past the factories and fields, to the highway strung out with tiny cars and tractor trailers. Beyond that, I saw Coldwater itself, a cluster of homes, shops, and Greenland parks. Just as quickly, I lost velocity. My stomach flip-flopped, air skidding over my body as my direction reversed. The river rushed up at me. I had the urge to pinwheel my arms frantically, but it was as if my body wouldn't stand for it. It refused to be anything less than graceful and efficient, tucking into a tight missile. My feet crashed into the boat ramp, smashing through the planks of wood, plunging me back into the water. More bullets whizzed past my ears. I scrabbled out of the debris, lunged up the riverbank, and took off sprinting for the trees. 2 mornings of running in the dark had given me some preparation, but it didn't explain why I was suddenly running at speeds that rivaled Dante's. The trees passed in a dizzying blur, but my feet leaped and bounded with ease, almost as if they could anticipate the necessary steps a half second before my mind. I raced at top speed up the walkway, flung myself inside the Volkswagen, and floored it out of the parking lot. To my amazement, I wasn't even out of breath. Adrenaline? Maybe, but I didn't think so. I drove to Allen's Drug and Pharmacy and slid the Volkswagen into a parking space nestled between 2 trucks that hid me from the street. Then I slouched in my seat, trying to make myself invisible. I was pretty sure I'd lost Pepper at the river, but it didn't hurt to be cautious. I needed time to think. I couldn't go home. I couldn't go back to school. What I really needed was to find Patch, but I didn't know where to start. My cell phone rang, startling me out of my reverie.
"Yo, Gray," Scott said. "V and I are on our way to Taco Hut for lunch, but the big question of the day is, where are you? Now that you A, can drive, and B, have wheels, thanks to me, you don't have to eat in the school cafeteria, FYI.
I ignored his jesting tone. "I need Dante's number. Text it to me and make it fast," I told Scott. I'd had Dante's number stored on my old phone, but not this one.
Please?
What is this, Double Standard Tuesday?
What do you need his number for? I thought Dante was your boy.
I hung up and tried to think things through. What did I know for certain? That an archangel leading a double life wanted to kidnap me and use me as incentive to get Patch to do him a favor. Or to quit blackmailing him. Or both. I also knew Patch wasn't the blackmailer. What information was I low on? Mostly Patch's whereabouts. Was he safe? Would he contact me? Did he need my help?
"Where are you, Patch?" I shouted into the universe.
My cell phone chimed.
"Here's Dante's number. Also, I hear chocolate works well for PMS," Scott texted.
"Funny," I said out loud, punching in Dante's number. He answered on the third ring. "We need to meet," I said with an edge.
"Listen, if it's about this morning..."
"Of course it's about this morning. What did you give me? I drank an unknown liquid, and suddenly I can run as fast as you and soar 50 feet into the air, and I'm pretty sure my vision is better than 20/20.
"It'll wear off. To sustain those speeds, you'd need to drink the blue stuff daily."
"Does the blue stuff have a name?"
"Not over the phone."
"Fine, meet me in person."
"Be at Rollerland in 30.
I blinked. "You want to meet at the roller skating rink?"
"It's noon on a weekday. Nobody there but moms and toddlers. Makes it easy to spot potential spies."
I wasn't sure who Dante thought might be spying on us, but I had an uneasy feeling fluttering around in my stomach that whatever the blue stuff was, Dante wasn't the only one who wanted it. My best guess, it was a drug of some sort. I'd witnessed its enhancement properties firsthand. The powers it gave me were surreal. It was as if I had no boundaries, and the extent of my own physical prowess was limitless. The feeling was exhilarating and unnatural. It was the latter that had me worried. When Hank was alive, he'd experimented with devilcraft, summoning the powers of hell to his advantage. The objects he'd enchanted had always cast an eerie blue hue. Up until now, I'd believed that the knowledge of devilcraft had died with Hank, but I was beginning to have doubts. I hoped Dante's blue mystery drink was a coincidence, but instinct told me otherwise. I got out of the car and walked the last few blocks to Rollerland, checking over my shoulder often for signs that I was being followed. No strange men in dark trench coats and sunglasses, no overly tall people, a dead giveaway of Nephilim, either. I swung through Rollerland's doors, rented a pair of size 8 roller skates, and sat down on a bench just outside the rink. The lights were low and a disco ball scattered shades of bright, saturated light across the polished wood floor. Old-school Britney Spears played through the speakers. As Dante had predicted, only small children and their moms were skating at this hour. A shift in the air, snapping with voltage, alerted me to Dante's presence. He lowered himself onto the bench beside me, dressed in dark tailored jeans and a fitted navy polo. He hadn't bothered to remove his sunglasses, making it impossible to see his eyes. I wondered if he regretted giving me the drink and was experiencing some degree of moral conflict. I hoped so.
"Going skating?"
he asked with a nod at my feet. I noticed he wasn't carting skates. The sign said you have to rent skates to go beyond the lobby.
"You could have mind-tricked the counter attendant."
I felt my mood darken. "That's not really how I play."
Dante shrugged. "Then you're missing out on a lot of the perks of being Nephilim."
"Tell me about the blue drink."
"It's an enhancement drink."
"So I gathered. What's it enhanced with?" Dante leaned his head toward mine and spoke in a whisper.
"Devilcraft. It's not as bad as it sounds," he assured me.
My spine stiffened and the hairs on the back of my neck tingled. No, no, no. Devilcraft was supposed to be eradicated from Earth. It had disappeared with Hank. "I know what devilcraft is, and I thought it was destroyed." Dante's dark eyebrows furrowed. How do you know about Devilcraft?
Hank used it. So did his accomplice, Chauncey Langer. But when Hank died,
I caught myself. Dante didn't know I'd killed Hank, and to say that it wasn't going to help my rapport with the Nephilim, Dante included, if my secret got out, was the understatement of the year.
Patch used to spy for Hank.
A nod. I know, they had a deal. Patch fed us information on fallen angels. I didn't know whether Dante intentionally left out that Patch had agreed to spy for Hank on one condition, that he preserve my life, or if Hank had kept those details private.
Hank told Patch about Devilcraft, I lied, covering my tracks. But Patch told me that when Hank died, Devilcraft went with him. Patch was under the impression that Hank was the only one who knew how to manipulate it.
Dante shook his head. Hank put his right-hand man, Blakely, in charge of developing Devilcraft prototypes. Blakely knows more about Devilcraft than Hank ever did. Blakely has spent the past several months holed up in a lab, enchanting knives, whips, and studded rings with Devilcraft, transforming them into deadly weapons. Most recently, he's formulated a drink that will elevate Nephilim powers. We're evenly matched, Nora, he said with an excited glint in his eyes. Used to be it took 10 Nephilim to every fallen angel. Not so anymore. I've been testing the drink for Blakely, and when I take the enhanced drink, the playing field consistently tilts to my advantage. I can go up against a single fallen angel without any fear that he's stronger.
My thoughts spun wildly. Devilcraft was thriving on Earth? The Nephilim had a secret weapon being fabricated in a secret lab? I had to tell Patch. Is the drink you gave me the same one you've been testing for Blakely?
Yes. A crafty smile. Now you understand what I'm talking about.
If he wanted accolades, he wasn't getting them from me. How many Nephilim know about the drink or have ingested it?
Dante leaned back on the bench and sighed. Are you asking for yourself? He paused with meaning, or to share our secret with Patch.
I hesitated, and Dante's face fell.
You have to choose, Nora. You can't be loyal to us and Patch. You're making an admirable go of it, but in the end, loyalty is about taking a side. You're either with the Nephilim or against us.
The worst part of this conversation was that Dante was right. Deep down, I knew it. Patch and I had agreed that our endgame in the war was to come out of it safely together. But if I still maintained that that was my only goal, where did it leave the Nephilim? I was supposedly their leader, asking them to believe I was going to help them, but I really wasn't.
If you tell Patch about Devilcraft, he won't sit on the information, Dante said. He'll go after Blakely and try to destroy the lab, not out of a lofty sense of moral duty, but out of self-preservation. This isn't just about Heshvan anymore, he explained. My goal isn't to push fallen angels back behind some arbitrary line, such as stopping them from possessing us. My goal is to annihilate the entire fallen angel race using Devilcraft, and if they don't already know it, they're going to figure it out soon.
I sputtered. What?
Hank had a plan. This was it. The extinction of their race. Blakely believes that with a little more time, he can develop a prototype of a weapon strong enough to kill a fallen angel, something that was never even considered possible until now.
I jumped off the bench and began pacing the floor. Why are you telling me this?
It's time to make your choice. Are you with us or not?
Patch isn't the problem. He isn't working with fallen angels. He doesn't want war. Patch's only goal was making sure I stayed in power, fulfilled my oath, and came out alive. But if I told him about Devilcraft, Dante was right. Patch would do everything he could to destroy it.
If you tell him about Devilcraft, it's over for us, Dante said.
He was asking me to either betray him, Scott, and thousands of innocent Nephilim, or Patch. A heavy weight roiled my stomach. The pain was so sharp, I nearly doubled over.
Take the afternoon to think about it, Dante said, rising to his feet. Unless I hear otherwise, I'll expect you to be ready to train first thing tomorrow.
He watched me a moment, his brown eyes steady but holding a shade of doubt.
I hope we're still on the same side, Nora, he said quietly, then walked out.
I stayed in the building several minutes, sitting in the semi-darkness, surrounded by the bizarrely cheerful squeals and laughter of children trying to do the hokey-pokey in roller skates. I bowed my head and hid my face in my hands. This wasn't how things were supposed to happen.
I was supposed to call off the war, declare a ceasefire, and walk away from it all to be with Patch. Instead, Dante and Blakely had plowed ahead, picked up right where Hank had left off, and raised the stakes to all or nothing. Stupid, stupid, stupid. Under normal circumstances, I wouldn't think Dante and Blakely, and all Nephilim for that matter, stood a chance at annihilating fallen angels. But I suspected that Devilcraft changed everything. And what did it mean for my half of the deal? If the Nephilim waged war without me, would the Archangels still hold me accountable? Yes. Yes, they would. Wherever Blakely was holed up, undoubtedly guarded by his own small and vigilant Nephilim security detail, it was clear he was experimenting with more powerful and more dangerous prototypes. He was the root of the problem, which put finding him and his secret lab at the top of my priority list. Right after I found Patch, my stomach somersaulted with worry, and I sent up yet another silent prayer for him. Chapter 10. I was a short distance from the Volkswagen when I saw a shadowy figure taking up space in the driver's seat. I stopped, my thoughts taking an initial dive into cowboy hat back for round two territory. I held my breath, debating the wisdom of running, but the longer I debated, the more my overactive imagination waned, and the figure took its true form. Patch crooked his finger, beckoning me inside. I broke into a grin, my worry dissolving instantaneously. "Skipping school for roller skating?" he asked as I dropped inside the car. "You know me. Purple wheels are my weakness." Patch smiled. "I didn't see your car at school. I've been looking for you. Can you spare a few minutes?" I handed him my keys. "You drive." Patch drove us to a gorgeous luxury townhouse complex overlooking Casco Bay. The building's historic charm, deep red brick mixed with stone from a local quarry, placed it well over 100 years old, but it had been completely renovated with gleaming windows, black marble columns, and a doorman. Patch pulled into a single-car garage and lowered the door, leaving us in cool darkness. "New place?" I asked.
"Pepper hired a few Nephilim thugs to redecorate my studio beneath Delphic. I needed a place on short notice with upgraded security."
We exited the Volkswagen, climbed a narrow set of stairs, walked through a door, and came out in Patch's new kitchen. Wall-to-wall windows offered stunning views of the bay. A few white sailboats dotted the water, and a picturesque blue fog shrouded the surrounding cliffs. Autumn foliage ringed the bay, burning in vibrant shades of red that seemed to set the landscape to flame. The dock at the base of the townhomes appeared to be valet access. "Swanky," I told Patch. He handed me a mug of hot cocoa from behind and kissed the back of my neck.
"It's more exposed than I'd like, and that's not something you'll hear me say often."
I leaned back against him, sipping my drink. "I was worried about you."
"Pepper surprised me outside the Devil's Handbag last night, meaning I didn't get a chance to talk to our Nephilim friend, Cowboy Hat. But I made a few calls and did some legwork, starting with looking into the cabin he took you to. He's not very smart. He took you to his grandparents' cabin. Cowboy Hat's real name is Sean Corbridge, and he's 2 years old by Nephilim count. He swore fealty 2 Christmases ago and willingly enlisted in the Black Hand's army. He has a short temper and a history of drug abuse. He's looking for a way to make a name for himself and thinks you're his ticket. His proclivity for stupidity goes without saying."
Patch kissed my neck again, this time letting his mouth linger.
"I missed you too. What have you got for me?"
Where to start?
"I could tell you how Pepper tried to kidnap me this morning and hold me hostage, or maybe you'd like to hear how Dante secretly fed me a drink enhanced with Devilcraft. Turns out Blakely, Hank's right-hand man, has been tinkering with Devilcraft for months and has developed a high-performance drug for Nephilim."
"They did what?"
he growled in a voice that couldn't have been more enraged.
"Did Pepper hurt you? And I'm going to rip Dante to pieces."
I shook my head no, but was surprised when tears sprang to my eyes. I knew why Dante had done it. He needed me strong enough physically to lead the Nephilim to victory. But I resented his approach. He'd lied to me. He tricked me into consuming a substance that was not only forbidden on Earth, but potentially dangerous. I wasn't naive enough to think Devilcraft didn't have negative side effects. The powers might wear off, but a seed of evil had been embedded inside me. I said, "Dante said the effects of the drink fade after a day. That's the good news. The bad news is I think he's planning to introduce it to countless other Nephilim soon. It will give them superpowers. That's the only way I can describe it. When I took it, I ran faster and jumped higher, and it sharpened my senses. Dante said that one-on-one, a Nephil could outfight a fallen angel. I believe him, Patch. I got away from Pepper, an archangel. Without the drink, he'd have me under lock and key right now. Cold fury burned in Patch's eyes.
Tell me where I can find Dante, he said crisply.
I hadn't expected Patch to get so angry, a major oversight in retrospect. Of course he was seething. Trouble was, if he went to find Dante now, Dante would know I'd told Patch about Devilcraft. I needed to play my hand carefully. What he did was wrong, but he thought he had my best interests in mind, I offered.
A harsh laugh. Do you really believe that?
I think he's desperate. He doesn't see a lot of other options.
Then he's not looking for them.
He also gave me an ultimatum. Either I'm with him and the Nephilim, or I'm with you. He told me about Devilcraft to test me, to see if I'd tell you. I tossed my hands up and let them drop. I'd never keep that information from you. We're a team, but we need to think how we're going to play this.
I'm going to kill him.
I sighed, pressing my fingertips into my temples. You're not seeing beyond your own personal distaste of Dante. That, and your rage.
Rage? Patch chuckled, but it was undeniably menacing. Oh, Angel, that's a bit tame for what I'm feeling. I've just learned that an Nephil forced Devilcraft into your body. I don't care if he wasn't thinking, and I don't care if he was desperate. It's one mistake he's not making again. And before you're tempted to feel sorry for him, know this. He saw it coming. I warned him if you so much as got a scratch while under his watch, I'd hold him accountable.
Under his watch? I echoed slowly, trying to connect the dots.
I know you're training with him,
Patch announced bluntly. You know?
You're a big girl. You can make your own decisions. You obviously had your reasons for wanting to learn self-defense from Dante, and I wasn't going to stop you. I trusted you. It was him I worried about, and it looks like I had every reason to be. I'll ask once more. Where is he hiding?
He nearly growled, his face darkening.
What makes you think he's hiding?
I said miserably, upset that once again I felt caught between Patch and Dante, between fallen angels and Nephilim. I hadn't intentionally meant to keep our training sessions from Patch. I'd simply thought it would be better not to stir up any more competition between him and Dante.
Patch's icy laugh sent a shiver dancing up my spine. If he's smart, he's hiding.
I'm angry too, Patch. Trust me, I wish I could go back and undo this morning, but I hate feeling like you're calling the shots without me. First you put a tracking device on me, next you threaten Dante behind my back. You're operating perpendicular to me. I want to feel like you're on my side. I want to feel like we're working together.
Patch's new cell phone rang and he glanced at the readout. Unusual behavior for him. These days he let all calls go to voicemail, then carefully screened which to return.
Expecting an important call? I asked.
Yes, and I have to take care of it now. I am on your side, Angel. I always will be. I'm sorry if you feel like I'm subverting your wishes. That's the last thing I want. Believe me.
He brushed a kiss across my mouth, but it felt brusque. He was already striding with purpose toward the stairs leading down to the garage.
I need you to do something for me. See if you can dig up anything on Blakely. Where he calls home these days, locations he's visited lately, how many Nephilim bodyguards he has protecting him, any new prototypes he's developing, and when he plans on introducing this super drink to the mainstream. You're right. I don't think Devilcraft has spread beyond Dante and Blakely yet. If it had, the Archangels would have jumped on it. Talk soon, Angel.
So we'll finish this conversation later? I called after him, still stunned by his rapid departure. He paused at the top of the stairs.
Dante gave you an ultimatum, but it was coming with or without him. I can't make the decision for you, but if you want a sounding board, let me know. I'm happy to help. Engage the alarm before you leave. Your personal key is on the counter. You're welcome anytime. I'll be in touch.
What about Heshvan? I said. I hadn't made it through half the things I'd wanted to discuss with him, and now he was running off. It starts tonight with the rising moon.
Patch gave a brusque nod. There's a bad feeling in the air. I'll be keeping tabs on you, but I want you to watch your back just the same. Don't be out any later than necessary. Sundown is your curfew tonight.
Since I didn't see the point in going back to school without a valid excuse slip, and since, if I left now, I'd only catch the last hour before the dismissal bell, I decided to stay at Patch's place and do some thinking-slash-soul-searching. I went to the fridge to hunt down a snack, but it was bare. It was very apparent Patch had moved in quickly and the furnishings had been included. The rooms were immaculate, lacking any personal touches. Stainless steel appliances, taupe paint, walnut flooring, modern American furniture in solid colors, flat-screen TV and leather club chairs facing each other, masculine, stylish, and lacking warmth. I replayed my conversation with Patch and decided he hadn't seemed the least bit sympathetic over Dante's ultimatum and my big dilemma. What did that mean? That he thought I could work things out on my own? That choosing between Nephilim and fallen angels was a no-brainer? Because it wasn't. The choice was getting harder with each passing day. I mulled over what I did know, namely that Patch wanted me to find out what Blakely was up to. Patch probably thought Dante was my best contact, a middleman between me and Blakely, so to speak. And in order to keep the lines of communication open between us, it was probably best that I keep Dante thinking I was on his side, that I saw eye to eye with the Nephilim. And I did, in many ways. My sympathy was with them because they weren't fighting for dominion or some other virtueless ambition. They were fighting for their freedom. I got it. I admired it. I'd do anything to help. But I didn't want Blakely or Dante putting the fallen angel population at risk. If fallen angels were wiped off the face of the earth, Patch would go with them. I wasn't willing to lose Patch, and I'd do whatever it took to make sure his species survived. In other words, I was no closer to answers. I was right back at square one, playing both sides of the field. The irony of it all struck me. I was just like Pepper Freiberg. The only difference between me and Pepper was that I wanted to take a side. All this sneaking around and lying and pretending to have allegiances to two opposing sides was keeping me up at night. Pretty soon my mind would be consumed with memorizing lies so I wouldn't get caught in my own elaborate net. I heaved a sigh and double-checked Patch's freezer. No cartons of ice cream had magically appeared since I'd last checked. Chapter 11. At 5 the following morning, my mattress dipped under the weight of a second body. My eyes sprang open to find Dante seated at the foot of the bed, wearing a somber expression. "Well?" he asked simply. I'd spent all of yesterday, into the night, trying to make up my mind, and I'd finally decided on a course of action. Now came the hard part, carrying it out. "Give me 5 minutes to get dressed and I'll meet you outside." His eyebrows lifted slightly in question, his hope visible. "Does that mean what I think it does? I'm not out training with fallen angels, am I?" Not exactly a straight answer, and I hoped Dante didn't press the issue. He smiled. 5 minutes it is. "But no more blue stuff," I said, bringing him to a halt at the door. "Just so we're clear." "Yesterday's sample didn't convince you?" To my dismay, he didn't look remorseful. If anything, his expression revealed disappointment. "I get the feeling it wouldn't make the FDA's approved list." "If you change your mind, it's on the house." I decided to take advantage of the conversation's direction. "Is Blakely developing any other enhancement drinks, and when do you think he'll widen his test group?" A noncommittal shrug. "I haven't talked to Blakely in a while." "Really? You're testing Devilcraft for him, and you were both close to Hank. I'm surprised you don't keep in touch." "You know the saying, don't put all your eggs in one basket? That's our strategy. Blakely develops the prototypes in his lab, and someone else delivers them to me. If something happens to one of us, the other is safe. I don't know where Blakely is, so if fallen angels grab and torture me, I can't tell them anything useful. Standard procedure. We're starting off with a 15-mile run, so make sure you're well hydrated." "Wait, what about Heshvan?" I studied his face steadfastly, bracing myself for the worst. I'd lain awake several hours last night, tensely waiting for an outward manifestation that it had arrived. I'd expected a shift in the air, a current of negative energy sizzling over my skin, or some other supernatural sign. Instead, Heshvan had arrived without so much as a whisper, and yet, somewhere out there, I was sure thousands of Nephilim were suffering in ways I couldn't imagine.
"Nothing," Dante said grimly.
"What do you mean, nothing?"
"As far as I know, not one fallen angel possessed their vassal last night."
I sat up. "That's a good thing, isn't it?" I added upon seeing Dante's grave expression. He was slow to respond.
I don't know what it means, but I don't think it's good. They wouldn't hold off without a reason. A very good one. He added hesitantly.
I don't understand.
Welcome to the club.
Could it be mental warfare? Do you think they're trying to unsettle the Nephilim?
I think they know something we don't.
After Dante quietly shut my bedroom door, I dragged on some sweats and mentally stored away this new information. I was dying to get Patch's take on last night's unexpected and anticlimactic start to Heshvan. Since he was a fallen angel, he'd likely have a more detailed explanation. What did the standoff mean? Disappointed not to have an answer, but knowing it was a waste of time to speculate, I turned my focus on what else I'd learned. I felt one infinitesimal step closer to tracking Devilcraft back to its source. Dante said he and Blakely never met in person, and that a middleman acted as a go-between, passing Blakely's prototypes to Dante. I needed to find the go-between. Outside, Dante merely had to take off running into the woods, and it was my signal to follow. Right away, I could tell that the blue drink infused with Devilcraft had been flushed from my system. Dante zipped between trees at dangerous speeds while I lagged behind, concentrating on each step to minimize injury. But even though I was relying on my own strengths and mine alone, I could tell I was improving, rapidly. A large boulder sat in my path directly ahead, and rather than veer around it, I made the split-second decision to vault it. I planted my foot halfway up the curved surface, propelled myself up, and soared over the boulder. Upon landing, I immediately slid under a brambly tree with low branches, and without missing a beat, sprang to my feet on the other side and kept running. At the end of the 15-mile loop, I was plastered in sweat and breathing hard. I leaned back against a tree and tilted my face up to catch the breeze.
"You're getting better," Dante said, sounding surprised.
I glanced sideways. He, of course, still looked freshly showered, not a hair out of place. "And without the help of Devilcraft," I pointed out.
"You'd see even bigger results if you'd agree to take the super drink."
I pushed up from the tree and windmilled my arms, stretching my shoulder muscles. "What's on the docket? More strength training?"
"Mind tricks."
That caught me off guard. "Invading minds?"
"Making people, especially fallen angels, see what isn't really there."
I didn't need a definition. I'd had mind tricks performed on me and never once had the experience been enjoyable. The whole point of a mind trick was to deceive a victim. "I'm not sure about this," I hedged. "Is it really necessary?"
"It's a powerful weapon, especially for you. If you can make your faster, stronger, larger opponent believe you're invisible, or that they're about to walk off a cliff, a few extra seconds might be what saves you."
"All right, show me how it's done," I said reluctantly.
"Step one, invade your opponent's mind. This is just like using mind speak. Try it on me."
"That's easy," I said, casting my mental nets toward Dante, ensnaring his mind and pushing words into his conscious thought. "I'm in your mind, having a look around, and it's awfully empty in here."
"Wiseacre," Dante returned.
"Nobody says that anymore. Speaking of which, how old are you in Nephilim years?"
I'd never thought to ask. I swore fealty during Napoleon's invasion of Italy, my homeland.
"And that was in what year? Help me out, I'm not a history buff."
Dante smiled. 1796.
"Wow, you're old."
"No, I'm experienced. Next step, tease apart the threads forming your opponent's thoughts. Break them down, scramble them, snap them in half, whatever works for you. The means of carrying out this step varies among Nephilim. For me, breaking down my victim's thoughts works best. I take the wall in their mind, the one that guards the very center where every thought is formed, and I tear it down, like this."
Before I even realized what was happening, Dante had me backed up against a tree, gently stroking a few stray hairs off my forehead. He tipped my chin up to look in my eyes, and I couldn't have pulled away from his penetrating gaze if I'd wanted. I drank in his gorgeous features. Deep brown eyes set an even distance from his strong, straight nose. Lush lips that bowed into a confident smile. Thick brown hair that fell over his forehead. His jawline was wide and chiseled and smooth from a fresh shave. And all this set against a backdrop of creamy, olive-toned skin. I could think of nothing but how good it would feel to kiss him. Every other thought in my head had been stripped away, and I didn't mind. I was lost in a heavenly dream, and if I never woke up, I wouldn't care. Kiss Dante.
Yes, that's exactly what I wanted. I reached up on my tiptoes, closing the distance between our mouths, a thrilling flutter beating like wings in my chest. Wings. Angels.
Patch. Impulsively, I threw up a new wall in my head, and suddenly I saw the situation for what it really was. Dante had me backed up against a tree all right, but I did not want to make out with him.
Demonstration finished, Dante said, his smile a bit too cocky for my liking.
Next time, choose a more appropriate demonstration, I said tensely. Patch would kill you if he found out about this.
His smile didn't fade.
That's a figure of speech that doesn't work very well with Nephilim.
I wasn't in the mood for humor.
I know what you're doing. You're trying to set him off. This petty feud between the two of you will blow up to a whole new level if you mess with me. Patch is the last person you want to antagonize. He doesn't hold grudges because the people who cross him tend to disappear quickly. And what you just did, that was crossing him.
It was the first idea that came to mind, he said. It won't happen again.
I might have felt better about his apology had he sounded remotely penitent.
See that it doesn't, I answered in a steely tone.
Dante seemed to shrug off any ill feelings with ease.
Now it's your turn. Get inside my head and break down my thoughts. If you can, replace them with something of your own making. In other words, create an illusion.
Since getting back to work was the fastest way to end the lesson and end my time with Dante, I shoved my personal irritation aside and concentrated on the task at hand. With my nets still swimming through Dante's mind, I envisioned first ensnaring his thoughts and then pulling them apart one small thread at a time. The image in my head wasn't all that different from peeling apart string cheese, one thin ribbon after another.
Work faster, Dante ordered. I feel you in my head, but you're not causing any turbulence. Make waves, Nora. Rock the boat. Hit me before I even see it coming. Think of this as an ambush. If I were a real opponent, all this would accomplish is letting me know you're dabbling in my head, and that will put you face to face with one very pissed off fallen angel.
I backed out of Dante's mind, drew a deep breath, and threw my nets again, farther this time. Shutting my eyes to block out any distractions, I created a new image. Scissors. Giant gleaming scissors. I snipped apart Dante's thoughts.
Faster, Dante barked. I can feel your hesitancy. You're so unsure of yourself, I can practically smell your self-doubt. Any fallen angel worth his weight will pounce on that. Take control!
I retreated again, balling my hands into fists as I grew more frustrated. With Dante and myself. He pushed too hard and set expectations too high, and I couldn't banish the voices of doubt sniggering in my head. I berated myself for being the very thing Dante believed I was, weak. I'd come out this morning to keep up relations with Dante, motivated by using him to get to Blakely and his Devilcraft lab, but that meant nothing to me now. I wanted to own this. Fury and resentment popped behind my eyes like little red dots. My vision narrowed. I didn't want to be inadequate anymore. I didn't want to be smaller, slower, weaker. Fierce determination seemed to set my blood to boil. My entire body quaked with obstinate resolve as I leveled my gaze on Dante. Everything else dropped away. There was only me and him. I cast a mental net into Dante's mind with all the fervor I had. I threw my anger at Hank, my insecurities with myself, and the awful tug-of-war sensation ripping me apart every time I thought about choosing between Patch and the Nephilim into Dante's mind. Instantly, I envisioned a massive explosion, clouds of smoke and debris mushrooming higher, endlessly higher. I set off another explosion and another. I wreaked havoc on any hope he had at keeping his thoughts orderly. Dante rocked back on his heels, visibly shaken.
How did you do that? He finally managed to ask. I couldn't see. I'm not even sure where I was.
He blinked several times in succession, staring at me like he wasn't sure I was real.
It was like hanging between two moments in time. There was nothing. Nothing. It was like I didn't exist. I've never had anything like that happen before.
I imagined I was setting off bombs in your head, I confessed.
Well, it worked.
So I passed?
Yeah, you could say that,
Dante told me, shaking his head in disbelief.
I've been doing this a long time, and I've never seen anything like that.
I wasn't sure whether I should feel elated over finally doing something right,
or guilty over having been surprisingly good at invading Dante's mind. It wasn't the most honorable talent to excel at. If I could have any trophy displayed on my dresser, I wouldn't voluntarily choose one for corrupting people's minds.
"Then I guess we're done here?" I asked.
"Until tomorrow," Dante said, his expression still dazed.
"Good work, Nora."
I jogged the rest of the way home at a normal human pace, an excruciatingly lagging 6 miles per hour. Because the sun had started to rise, and while I didn't sense any humans in the vicinity, it didn't hurt to be prudent. I came out of the woods, crossed the street to the farmhouse, and stopped abruptly at the base of the driveway. Marcy Miller's red Toyota 4Runner was parked directly ahead. With an ever-increasing tightening of my stomach, I jogged up the porch. Several moving boxes were stacked by the door. I shoved my way into the house, but before I could get a word out, my mom jumped up from the kitchen table.
"There you are!" she exclaimed impatiently. "Where have you been? Marcy and I have spent the past half hour trying to figure out where you could have run off to at this hour."
Marcy sat at my kitchen table, hands cupped around a mug of coffee. She gave me an innocent smile.
"I went jogging," I said.
"I can see that," Mom stated.
"I just wish you would have told me. You didn't even bother to leave a note."
"It's 7 in the morning. You're supposed to be in bed. What is she doing here?"
"I'm right here," Marcy said sweetly. "You can talk to me."
I settled my eyes on her.
"Fine. What are you doing here?"
"I told you. I'm not getting along with my mom. We need some breathing room. For the time being, I think it's better if I move in with you guys. My mom doesn't have a problem with it."
Not looking the least bit disconcerted, she took a sip of coffee.
"Why would you think that was a good idea, let alone a reasonable one?"
Marcy rolled her eyes.
"Hello, we're family."
My jaw fell open and my eyes immediately cut to my mom. To my disbelief, she didn't look rattled.
"Oh, come on, Nora," she said. "We all knew it, even if no one was willing to say it. Under the circumstances, Hank would want me to take Marcy in with open arms."
I was speechless. How could she be kind to Marcy? Could she not remember our history with the Millers?
This was Hank's fault, I seethed inwardly. I'd hoped his grip on my mom would end with his death, but every time I tried to talk to her about him, she adopted the same serene attitude. Hank was coming back to her, she wanted him to, and she'd wait stalwartly until he did. Her bizarre behavior was further evidence of my theory. Hank had employed some crazy devilcraft mind trick on her before he died. No amount of arguing on my part would penetrate her picture-perfect recollection of one of the vilest men to ever inhabit our planet.
"Marcy is family, and while the circumstances are a bit sticky, she was right to come to us for help. If you can't count on family, who can you count on?" Mom went on.
I was still staring at my mom, frustrated by her sedate attitude, when a second light went on.
Of course. Hank wasn't the only one to blame in this charade. How had it taken me this long to catch on?
I swiveled my eyes to Marcy.
"Are you mind-tricking her?" I said accusingly to her mind. "Is that it? I know you're doing something because there is no way my mom and her rational mind would let you move in with us."
Marcy's hand flew to her head and she yelped.
"Ow! How did you do that?"
"Don't play dumb with me. I know you're in the field, remember? You can perform mind tricks and you can mind speak. Whatever this little act is, I see right through it, and there is no way you're moving in."
"Fine," Marcy fired back. "I know about mind speak, and I know about mind tricks, but I'm not using them on your mom."
"My mom justifies all her crazy behavior by saying my dad would have wanted it that way too, you know. He probably mind-tricked both our moms before he died. He wouldn't have wanted our families fighting. Don't blame me just because I'm an available target for your anger."
"Marcy, I'll have the spare bedroom cleared out for you by the time you get home from school this afternoon," Mom said, looking daggers at me. "You'll have to forgive Nora for being so ungracious. She's used to being an only child and getting her way. Maybe this new living arrangement will give her a new outlook."
"I'm used to getting my way?" I challenged. "Marcy's an only child, too. If we're going to point fingers, let's be fair about it."
Marcy smiled, clasping her hands together in delight. "Thank you so much, Mrs. Gray. I really appreciate it."
she had the audacity to bound over and hug my mom.
"Kill me now," I muttered.
"Careful what you wish for," Marcy crooned in a sugary tone.
"Are you ready for this?" I asked my mom. "Two teenage girls, one ugly rivalry, and most importantly, one shared bathroom?" To my disgust, Mom smiled.
"Family, the latest extreme sport.
After school, we'll carry Marcy's boxes upstairs, get her settled in, and then we'll all go out for pizza. Nora, do you think you could ask Scott to help? Some of the boxes might be heavy."
"I think Scott practices with his band on Wednesdays," I lied, knowing full well V would throw an epic fit if she discovered I'd knowingly allowed Marcy and Scott in the same room together.
"I'll talk to him," Marcy piped up. "Scott is such a sweetheart. I can convince him to come over after practice. Is it all right if I invite him for pizza, Mrs. Gray?"
"Hello? Scott Purnell? A sweetheart?" Was I the only one hearing the absurdity in all this?
"Of course," Mom said.
"I have to shower," I said, looking for any excuse to flee the scene. I'd hit my maximum Marcy limit for the day and needed to recuperate. A daunting thought struck me. If Marcy moved in, I'd hit my limit by 7 every morning.
"Oh, Nora," Mom called before I'd reached the stairs. "The school left a message on the phone yesterday afternoon. I think it was the attendance office. Do you know why they'd be calling?"
I froze. Marcy stood behind my mom, mouthing, "Busted," at me, barely able to control her glee.
"I'll swing by the office today and see what they need," I said. "The call was probably routine."
"Yeah, probably," Marcy echoed, wearing that haughty grin of hers that I hated most of all.
Chapter 12. Shortly after breakfast, I bumped into Marcy on the front porch. She was on her way out the door, chatting on her cell phone, and I was on my way back inside, looking for her.
"Your forerunner is blocking my car," I said. She held up a finger, signaling me to wait. I grabbed her cell phone, ended the call, and repeated more testily, "You're blocking my car."
"Don't blow a gasket, and don't piss me off. If you touch my cell phone again, I'll pee in your Cheerios."
"That's disgusting."
"That was Scott on the phone. He doesn't have practice today, and he wants to help move boxes."
Great. I could look forward to arguing about this with V, who wouldn't believe me when I said, "I tried."
"As much as I'd love to sit here and shoot the breeze, I have class, so..." I gestured dramatically at Marcy's forerunner, which was inconveniently boxing in the Volkswagen.
"You know, if you need an excused absence slip, I have a few extras. I work in the front office, and every now and then, they find their way into my purse."
"Why would you think I'd need an excused absence slip?"
"The attendance office left a message on your phone," Marcy stated, clearly unimpressed by my feigned innocence.
"You skipped class, didn't you?"
It wasn't really a question.
"Okay, so maybe I need an excused absence from the nurse," I admitted.
Marcy gave me a patronizing look.
"Did you use the old I have a headache excuse? Or maybe the classic, PMS? And what did you ditch school for?"
"None of your business. Can I get the excused slip or not?" She opened her purse, scrounged around, and produced a pink slip of paper bearing the school logo. As far as I could tell, it wasn't a reproduction.
"Take it," she said.
I hesitated. Is this one of those things that's going to come back to haunt me?
My, aren't we suspicious?
If it seems too good to be true.
"Take the slip already," she said, waving it in my face.
I had the bad feeling this was a favor with strings attached.
10 days from now, are you going to need something in return?" I pressed.
"Maybe not 10 days from now." I held up my hand.
"Then forget it."
"I'm only kidding. Yeesh, you are no fun. Here's the truth. I was trying to be nice."
"Marcy, you don't know how to be nice."
"Consider this a sincere attempt," she said, and slapped the pink slip into my palm.
"Take it, and I'll move my car."
I pocketed the slip and said, "While we're still on speaking terms, I have a question. Your dad was friends with a man named Blakely, and I need to find him. Does his name ring a bell?" Her face was a mask. Hard to tell if she'd had a reaction.
"Depends. Are you going to tell me why you need to find him?"
"I have some questions for him."
"What kind of questions?"
"I'd rather not share."
"Then neither would I."
I swallowed down a few unsavory comments and tried again.
I'd like to tell you, Marcy, really, I would, but there are some things you're better off not knowing.
That's what my dad always told me. I think he was lying then, and I think you're lying now. If you want my help finding Blakely, I want full disclosure.
How do I know you even have anything on Blakely? I protested. Marcy was good at playing games, and I wouldn't put her past bluffing right now.
My dad took me to Blakely's house once.
I jumped on the information. Do you have an address? Could you find your way back?
Blakely doesn't live there anymore. He was getting divorced at the time, and my dad temporarily put him up in an apartment. But I did see some pictures on the mantle. Blakely has a little brother. You know him because he goes to school with us. Alex Blakely.
The football player?
Yeah, the star running back?
I was stunned. Did this mean Alex was Nephilim too?
Are Blakely and his brother close?
Blakely bragged about Alex the whole time I was there, which was, like, stupid, because our football team sucks. Blakely said he's never missed a game.
Blakely had a brother, and his brother was Coldwater High's star running back.
When is the next football game? I asked Marcy, trying to contain my excitement.
Friday? Duh. Games are always on Friday.
Home or away?
Home?
A home game. Blakely was presumably working around the clock developing prototypes. All the more reason he'd want to leave his laboratory for a few hours and do something he actually enjoyed. Chances were he'd surface for a few hours this Friday night to watch his little brother play football. Since Blakely was divorced, Alex just might be the only family he had left. Making it to Alex's game would be important to him.
You think Blakely's going to come to the game, Marcy said.
It would be really helpful if he did.
This is the part where you tell me what you're going to ask him.
I met Marcy's eyes and lied to her straight-faced. I want to know if he has any idea who killed our dad. Marcy almost flinched, but caught herself at the last moment. Her eyes stared ahead without blinking, giving away nothing to her thoughts. I want to be there when you ask him.
Sure, I lied again. No problem.
I watched Marcy back down the driveway. As soon as she cleared the curb, I shoved the key into the Volkswagen's ignition. 6 attempts later, it still hadn't whined to life. I brushed aside my impatience. Nothing could sour my mood, not even the Volkswagen. I just found the lead I'd so desperately needed. After school, I drove to Patches. I did the safety-conscious thing and circled the block a few times before parking in the freshly paved lot with extra-wide parking spaces. I didn't like feeling like I constantly had to watch my back, but I liked surprise visits from unfriendly Nephilim and devious archangels even less. And as far as the outside world knew, Patch and I were Splitsville. Using my key, I let myself inside.
Hello,
I called out. The place felt empty. The couch cushions weren't indented from a recent sitting, and the TV remote hadn't moved since yesterday. Not that I could picture Patch sitting around watching ESPN all afternoon. If I had to guess, he'd probably spent the day trying to find Pepper's real blackmailer or tracking down Cowboy Hat and Co. I walked deeper into the townhome. Half bath on the right, spare bedroom on the left, master bedroom at the back. Patch's lair. His bed had a navy duvet with matching navy sheets and decorative pillows that also didn't appear touched. I opened the shutters and drank in the breathtaking panoramic views of Casco Bay and Peaks Island under an overcast sky. If Marcy got to be too much, I could always move in with Patch. My mom would love that. I sent Patch a text.
Guess where I am?
I don't have to guess. You're wearing the tracking device, he answered. I looked down. Sure enough, I'd worn the jean jacket today. Give me 20 and I'll be there, Patch texted. Which room, specifically, are you in?
Your bedroom.
Make that 10 minutes. I smiled and tucked my cell phone inside my purse. Then I flopped back on the king-sized bed. The mattress was soft, but not too soft.
I imagined Patch lying here, stretched out on this very bed, wearing who knew what.
Boxers? Briefs? Nothing at all? I had the means and the method to find out, but going down that route didn't feel like the safest option. Not when I was doing my best to keep my relationship with Patch as uncomplicated as possible. I needed our lives to calm down before I figured out when and if I wanted to take that next big step. 10 minutes later, Patch strolled in to find me channel surfing on the couch. I clicked off the TV.
You moved rooms, he said.
It's safer this way.
I'm that scary?
No, but the consequences might be.
Who was I kidding? Yes, Patch was that scary. At 6'2", he was the embodiment of male physical perfection. I had a slim, well-proportioned figure, and I knew I was attractive, but I was no super goddess.